Right now, we're live in ACRA with Steve Pierce from the Sanctuary for Independent Media, and now WOOCLP.
Hello.
How did you come up with WOOC?
Well, it was a torturous process.
Oh, yes.
Because one of the great things that's happened in the last few years has been an explosion of new radio stations, 1,000 new LPFMs this year alone. But the problem is there's only four characters that you're allowed for a call sign,
and
one of them is
W.
So all the good ones basically have been taken, the ones that mean something. You guys have a great one. So what we did was
we went through, we started with that, and then everybody wanted to come up with something better, and then we spent 6 or 8 months or maybe a year trying to find something better, and then we just went back to what we started with.
Yeah, well, I actually, there's a couple places on the internet where you can find lists of the possible combinations
of
letters.
I saw this list, yeah.
And so I would look through and look for four letters that meant something, starting with W, and then I'd look to see if they were available, and none of them were available. So the reason we chose WOOC actually was very pragmatic. It doesn't really mean anything, although if you contort yourself, you could get it to mean, woo, Capital Region. Which one of our volunteers proposed. In fact, we have a couple of station IDs already oriented to that. But the reason we chose it is that there are two other organizations with construction permits, one in Albany and one in Schenectady. And WOOA was available in Albany, WOOS in Schenectady, and WOOC in Troy.
Right.
So we thought we'd be able to do some co-branding by just having similar.
Very good. I like the two O's too. It just like there could be eyeballs. They could be. You could have like a little owl as your symbol or something.
Yeah. The problem is I used to work at WWOZ in New Orleans. I was living down there when the station went on the air. And WOOC is very close to WWOZ. And so I'm constantly making mistakes calling ourselves. I'm sure this is going to work out. But, you know, we send out emails asking for support for WWOC or whatnot. Anyway, WOOC, we're on the air with Test Authority from the FCC. And we're really excited about it.
What is the frequency, Kenneth?
105.3. So it's a nice position right in the middle of commercial stations. It's actually the radio dial in our area, probably similar to yours, is really dismal. Lots of religious broadcasters.
WAMC is on every third station.
Yeah, they have a shaky signal scattered all across the dial, which I guess is why they have so many of them.
Yes.
But it's kind of grim. We're hoping for the best. And people have unfortunately gotten used to not listening to the radio much in the Capital Region except in their cars, and I'm not sure that we're going to be the force to change that, but we're going to try.
What 95.3? No, 105.3.
Yeah.
105.3.
The last available frequency, we really shoehorned it in. We had a great broadcast engineer, Michael Brown, out in Oregon, who helped us, spent so much time with us trying to find something that would work to sneak in a signal between the much larger stations without interfering with them.
And the studio is at the sanctuary?
Yeah, we built a studio. We kind of subdivided our space. It's an old church in North Troy. And we moved in there about 10 years ago, and it was unfathomable that we'd ever run out of space there. It's so enormous. And now, largely because of the big piles of stuff everywhere, but whatever, it's very difficult to find any space to do anything. And so we actually found some big sheets of plate glass in an alley in Troy. Some RPI students found them and brought them in and built a glass wall studio inside one of our larger spaces. It's pretty cool.
Is that's where the performance space is?
Next to it.
So up in that area.
Yeah, we wanted it to be wheelchair accessible. And also there's something kind of cool about coming. We do a lot of events already. We've been doing that for 10 years. So it's kind of cool for people who come into the space to see the radio station operating in the background. And we'll be broadcasting probably pretty much everything that we do. So it's pretty much an integral part of our performance space, and also we wanted it to be wheelchair accessible, so what the first floor is. But you know, we still have a lot. We got our studio pretty much built, and now we have to think about production facilities and all music libraries, all kinds of stuff like that. But first things first.
And it's low power FM, which means it's 100 watts or less, but you're up on that large hill ridge overlooking the Hudson River, your antenna is, so you can actually, your signal gets out fairly far, right?
Yeah, we found one of our supporters has 5 acres in a suburban-y area very close to Troy. We were challenged to find a tower site because we can't be in Troy because there's a co-channel and another station on the same frequency. Too close for us to be in Troy itself, and so we needed to be on a ridge overlooking Troy, and we'd happen to have a supporter who's a big solar energy advocate. He actually had a pile of tower parts on the ground, which he's been meaning to do something with for 5 or 6 years. We ended up getting another donation for our antenna mast, but he was into it. And so he's letting us use the space. He's thrilled because he gets to use our internet connection there, a local internet provider that competes with Time Warner. It's called Massive Mesh. It's a wireless internet company. And they have a repeater on a water tower that's within sight of his property, and we just had to cut down a lot of trees. And he was okay with that. He said, you know, I've got a lot of trees. Cut down whatever you want. It's just been great to work with. And so we got a good spot.
You had to cut down the trees to put the internet in, or
well, it's wireless. It's line of sight. And so you can see this water tower, which looms over the city. But there were tons of trees in the way. And we didn't have to cut too many of them because the leaves are down. But we have some volunteer arborists who came out and cut down a bunch of trees and helped us put up the antenna. But clearly, before the spring comes, we're going to have to cut down more trees. We want to clear about 100 feet around the tower so that our tower is not taller than the trees. So we're going to be battling that a little bit. And then we also need line of sight for the internet connection. So a lot of our landowner also burns wood for heat. So he's excited about it.
He's taking the trees.
Yeah. Yeah. It's working out really well. It's very organic.
So right now you're just broadcasting just a basic signal so that I guess people can test where they can hear it or not.
Exactly. We just started on Christmas Eve. Petri Dish, one of the founders of the Prometheus Radio Project, came up and helped us put up the antenna. He helped WGXC too, I guess, with your on-air work. He came up and we figured out a bunch of the problems on Christmas Eve and went on with just a single song playing over and over again with a station ID.
What is the song?
It's called In the Time of the Now. It's a live recording from the Sanctuary for Independent Media by a local artist named Taina Asili. It's a great song about persevering over obstacles, and it's a great song. When we get on the internet, you can hear it over and over again. We chose that both because of the subject matter and because Taina is local, and also we figured that would be the least likely to get into trouble with the DMCA people, since we're using our own recording of a local song. Nobody's going to complain about that. We're starting to now get into the major leagues of worrying about all these rights issues that that are really frustrating because they're so complex and really makes me angry, because here we are, volunteers trying to help musicians in the music industry, and the music industry makes it as difficult as possible for us to do it, which, you know, unfortunate, but especially at our scale where there's no paid staff, it's just really difficult to keep up with all that stuff. We're not doing it yet, but I'm just looking through the reams of information about startup stations, and that's one of the things that we're going to have to wrangle with. I know you guys have been doing that. You've been on the air for 5 years?
It'll be 5 years in February.
That's just so amazing. We're inspired by all the stuff that you guys do and how successful you've been. So great to be sitting here in your mountaintop studio.
We're hoping to partner and see if there's ways to share news coverage or programming. Like we have a Hudson Valley beer show that you guys might be interested in, that he often gets brewers from the capital region as well as further down in the Hudson Valley.
Absolutely. That sounds like it's right up our alley. We have a bunch of microbreweries and nanobreweries right around Troy, so that would be, I think, really welcome. We definitely would like to share programming. You know, as you know, it's so difficult to produce original programming, and with 160 hours in a week that need to be filled, we want to make sure that we're doing the best we can to provide really high quality local programming. And that's a lot of work, so it would be a shame to just air it once in one place and let it go.
Yeah, I know. One show I think that we wanted to talk to you about sharing was is Senator, former State Senator Celia Kacik does a show every other week now where she talks to people in Albany and about what's going on in state government. That seems like it would be up your alley, too. So there are definitely things. But you're going to try to produce a morning and afternoon show first? Is that where you're starting to concentrate on?
Yeah, I mean, I think what we're going to do is go on the air with a largely automated format, which is pretty easy these days with the miracle of computers. And there's a lot of great programming available from the Pacifica Radio Network and other places. So we'll start with that and a basic music schedule, and then focus on our drive time programming to introduce local shows as we can, as we develop the... We have to train everybody. We have to develop all the mechanisms for doing live programming. But there's so much great stuff out there to talk about and to report on that isn't being really isn't being covered anymore with the decline of print media. And
yeah, what's the Troy media landscape like?
Well, you know, you have the Troy Record, which is a journal was a Journal Register company. I think they've gone bankrupt, and you know they're on the ropes. They've sold their own building. I think they were the owners of the Independent, which covered Hudson and some of the areas
that,
out here.
That now Perry Teasdale has.
Well, they closed it down.
They closed it. I mean, he restarted. Yeah, he worked before. Right?
He was the editor back then.
That's what I meant.
So that's kind of the. You know, so the Troy Record is a fading influence. We'll see if they can survive. And then you have the Albany Times Union, which is the major local paper, but they hardly have anybody working there anymore.
They have a Troy bureau or office?
They had one. They closed it. Oh. I mean, it's a bad time for local print. Well, any print media. Metroland just went out of business. The tax people came and closed them down. So
there used to be twice as many local TV stations. Not that they do a great job or anything, but now they're all have these co-joint arrangements where they have one newscast on two stations, and so there's as many newscasts.
It's expensive to do news, and they're greedy, and so it's a bad combination. They look to cut costs wherever they can. You know, one of the inspirations for me has been the local community groups that frequent what's called the TNAC page on Facebook, the Troy Neighborhood Action Coalition. And I was looking at it, and you learn so much from this. I mean, there's a lot of, you know, junk on Facebook that's just pop culture things, but I looked at that, and it's really kind of a model, I think, for what we could be doing with the radio station. It's super local content. You wouldn't know anything about these things happening if you didn't see it there. And these people are very knowledgeable about it. They're working in local nonprofit groups. If we could take that content, you know, make it a little bit more journalistic and put that on the air, I think we want to become the place that people tune to when something happens. Something as trivial as a fire engine going down the street to some controversy with the schools or with the city council or whatnot. I think there's a service to provide in that area.
Are you getting, our station started, people that used to work in radio or did a show in college or you know, did a show and the Clear Channel bought the station out and they didn't do a show anymore, started coming out of the woodwork. Are you starting to get the old radio professionals and college radio people, or do they not know about it yet?
Well, I think not very many people know about it because we've been, we have a full program that we do already that's based on public presentations and workshops and so forth. So that's what we've been promoting, part of our regular venue programming. But we have heard from a lot of folks who are interested. They've heard about it one way or another, and there's a lot of excitement, people kind of dogging us about when we're going to go on the air and so forth. And a lot of it didn't actually take us that long. We got our construction permit in February and came on the air in December, so that's not too bad as far as these things go. A lot of people have been anxious for us to go on the air. And as you say, a lot of them are former college radio people who have very fond memories of being on the air when they were in college, probably more because they were in college than because they were on the air. But that's okay. Well, hopefully we can provide, if not the exact same social
similar
environment.
Memories.
But if you think about it, there's all these people who have been trained to do radio who have no place to go when they get out of college, because particularly if there's no community radio station in their town. So there's a bunch of those folks. WRPI, college station at Rensselaer Polytechnic Institute, is the alma mater for many of these people who are interested in carrying on with community radio. And then there have been some commercial radio folks. You know, it's always a little risky, I think, to put people on the air who have prior experience, because the good thing is that they have prior experience and they can bring that knowledge in. But particularly with commercial radio people, you don't really want that. I don't think on the radio station, they kind of have to retrain themselves or be retrained to change the way of thinking and communicating that they learned in commercial radio. And it's, you know, so they're slick and all that, but which is great. They know what they're doing, but they might not have the community orientation that we'd like to see on the station. So I mean, it was good and bad with all of that. We can't afford to be too picky though. So
that's right. If listeners that don't know what the Sanctuary for Independent Media is, give us an idea of what that is and the website address and things like that.
Sure. We're at mediasanctuary.org. The Sanctuary for Independent Media started about 10 years ago. We're in our 11th year now. Originally, it was a group of people who were involved with the Hudson Mohawk Indie Media Center, the Hudson Mohawk Independent Media Center, part of the Indie Media Movement that started around the Battle for Seattle in 2000, I guess it was. And we had it was a small video production group that did a lot of anti-war documentaries around the time of the the increase of the hostilities in the Middle East. And we at the time were really amongst the very few people speaking out against the war as it escalated. And we never really had aspirations other than to have a workspace for ourselves. We had gotten evicted from the space we occupied in downtown Troy, and a friend of ours owned a church that he offered to us for very little money. And so we started renting it from him, and we thought we would do the... We kind of huddled together in the basement. The heating situation upstairs wasn't very good, so we huddled together for warmth in the basement and did our productions, and figured we'd use the upstairs from time to time to have events to fundraise for our rent. And the presentation part of what we do, films, music, speakers, really became what the Sanctuary for Independent Media is. We still do production, but it's evolved into a... reasonably ambitious presentation venue where we've had lots of great folks ranging from Amy Goodman and Chris Hedges to African touring musicians like Ali Farka Touré and Oliver Tukudzi. So a lot of great stuff that really comes out of the indie media movement. And I think we still maintain that basic core value of independent media as epitomized by the indie media groups. And like many of them, like most of them, the original focus on web-based community-supported news has faded because there's so many other things like it now. At the time, it was the only thing like it. And so we've become something else. And if you check out the website mediasanctuary.org, you can see a lot of videos and photos and all kinds of stuff about what we're doing. And eventually, you'll see a link to our online stream for WOOC.
And you'll be airing... broadcasting those future events at the Sanctuary?
Yeah, it's a little bit like my early days in New Orleans at WWOZ. We were headquartered above Tipitina's, which was a very active nightclub. And it wasn't soundproofed at all. It was just radio station equipment set up in an apartment above the club. So at 11 o'clock when the music started, you were broadcasting the music whether you wanted to or not. So we gave in and just dropped a microphone through the floor and broadcast everything live. So it won't be quite the same thing as broadcasting live from a bar every night, but whenever we have events, we'll be broadcasting them, both as a service and as a promotional tool, but also because we're not soundproofed enough to be doing two different things at once in the same space.
Well, and it'll be great. I mean, you have a community space where the community gathers that for years, and to have a place that, like, just like in New Orleans, that you can just hang a mic into sometimes will be great for many reasons. Like if you have a public issue going on in Troy, you can have a community forum about it, and boom, you're right there.
Yeah, we're pretty excited about that also. I think this is going to change our approach to presentation too, where now we have a couple seasons a year with a dozen or so events. I think rather than that sort of formal arrangement, we'll be doing things all year round from time to time.
Well, that's what's going to change for you that you don't realize yet is that... because we did the same thing. We started as an organization that put on events, and the events would end and have a finale to them. And but once the radio station start, there is no end. There's just the next hour, always the next hour.
It's the insatiable maw of live radio. It is really a challenge, and I'm not sure exactly what's going to happen. But I'm heartened by the success of other stations that have come before us. Somehow, people seem to figure it out, and all these stations have. Personalities that are their own, and they fit with what the resources are and what the interests are of the audience. So we'll see.
And yeah, you mentioned earlier that some other station is sharing the frequency in Troy. So the South Troy there's another station on the same frequency?
No, it's not that. There are plenty of timeshare arrangements that came out of the last FCC filing window where multiple people applied for the same frequencies and didn't have enough points over each other to get total ownership of the frequency. So you have these bizarre situations where there's a community group sharing a frequency with a fundamentalist Christian organization and a labor union and, you know, a school district. And somehow they carve it all up. And I don't know how they do that, but they're doing it. In our case, it was something more mundane and technical. There's the FCC provides technical buffer spaces around all of its licensees, and the low-power FM stations have to observe these sort of safe zones so as to not interfere with other stations on the same frequency in other places. So you can only you have to locate your station in such a way that you're not going to interfere with an existing one, essentially. So the one in Troy, I believe it's a translator, probably for WAMC, that's somewhere around Albany, and so we have to maintain a buffer zone that we can't broadcast within. We actually broadcast into the buffer zone, but we can't locate our transmitter in there. So mm-hmm. we're as close to Troy as we can get with those restrictions in mind.
And so I was going to you're not the only new low-power FM station that may go on the air soon. I guess the other stations are behind you in terms of organization and broadcast testing. Nobody else has tested their signal, I guess.
No, we're the first in our area. There's also a radio station being developed by Grand Street Community Arts, which is a really great organization in downtown Albany, philosophically very aligned with what we're doing, that has a commitment to serving Albany in the same way that we intend to serve Troy. And they have an existing organization and a space, also a former church right downtown. And they've had a lot of trouble with their space. They're trying to renovate it and get their certificate of occupancy. And so to try to develop a radio station at the same time has been a challenge for them. First,
they need to make sure they have their space.
Yeah, they don't have the space to set up. they own a fabulous building, but it's just, you know, it's an old stone church, 100 years old. It's a big project in and of itself. But they're organizing. They're having volunteer meetings. They're very focused on getting this to happen. And I think they have a new executive director starting in January who really wants to see it come about. I don't have any doubt that they're going to go on the air. They will. They just got an extension for what's called their construction permit. So they have just about 18 months to get on the air. But they have a tower site. They know what they want to do. So I think they're going to
I think
be
if
successful.
You go on Facebook, you can see there's a monthly meeting or something, organizational
yeah.
meeting they have on the third Sunday or something like that.
Yeah, I'm very impressed with that. We found that it's difficult to get people to come to a meeting about something that doesn't yet exist, whereas they have they've pulled together a pretty decent group of people who are really excited, and we hope to help them as best we can to get on the air. We just had, for some reason, an easier time of it. There's also two other licensees or potential licensees, two construction permits out, another one in Albany and one in Schenectady. So potentially between these four LPFMs in the Capital Region and WGXC and some other Hudson Valley radio stations, we might be able to pull together a little upstate New York network for sharing programming.
Yeah, I was thinking that we could contact WJFF and in Jeffersonville and IOX in Roxbury and
at the Palinville station, which is a little further, I
and
guess.
The Great Barrington station too. And then that's a little network of stations that can have content that could be shared, and or perhaps I'd love to see a live evening newscast among a regional Hudson Valley, where maybe one station does it on Monday and the other station host it on Tuesday or something, and we share files and things like that. So these are all possibilities now, I guess. How close are you to being fully on the air?
Well, we were so excited on Christmas Eve that we just pulled a date out of our hat and said, okay, we're going live on Martin Luther King's birthday, because we have an event scheduled by the woman whose song is playing on the air over and over again, Taini Asili. And then reality set in. It's like, wait a second, that's 2 weeks away, and we don't have our emergency alert system set up yet, and we don't have our full-time broadcast authority from the FCC. So I guess it's conceivable that we'll do it. But, I think right now we're looking at a kind of a soft opening with a largely automated schedule so that we can start training people and then inserting them into the schedule as we go. It'd be great to come on the air, kaboom, with a, full-time schedule of all new programming, but that's it's probably going to be a little bit too ambitious for us. But I would say that we're going to be on the air. We're on the air now. We're not going to go off the air. It's just going to continue evolving into a full-time service.
And if people want to get involved, how should they get in contact?
They could just you could go to our website, mediasanctuary.org, and there's a contact form. Or you could send an email to info@mediasanctuary.org. That's the parent organization, and the radio station doesn't yet have a separate identity from it. That would, feel free. Or you could give us a call. It's 518 272-2390. Be happy to talk to you. There's all different kinds of things to do, ranging from networking, computer programming, automation system design, to doing the actual programming. We're also probably going to need help cleaning the toilets and stuff like that. I mean, as you know from running a community radio station,
those are the volunteers you want to find.
Yeah, that's a low barrier to entry for the project, but it's seemingly the most difficult help to get. So.
I always said everybody wants to go on the mic and do that volunteer work, but if you can find the people to empty the trash cans, then they're the good volunteers that will do anything to help keep the radio station on the air. And we should preface this all, that this all came out of thousands of stations committing civil disobedience during the 90s, sort of forcing the FCC's hand in creating this low-power FM class of stations that didn't exist before. There was basically no way for communities to apply to go on the air. This law that was first passed in 1999, but was very weak because the industry claimed this interference that didn't exist. They actually put out the National Association of Broadcasters put out this fake CD of what the tiny low power stations were going to, how they were going to interfere with the giant corporate stations, that was just made up and proved to be false. So the first law was passed in 1999, and it was very weak and didn't allow very many stations, but they put in a thing that they had to study what this interference was, and they had the Department of Defense study the potential interference. And they got to the third part of the study, which was the cost of the interference, and they said, well, you have nothing to do here because we haven't found any interference, so there's no cost that we can find. And then, 2011 was when the bill passed again, the second bill?
You have a better command of the dates than I have. The timeline seems right,
though. I think that's roughly right, where, or maybe it was 2010, and then it was initiated in 2011. I think that's what it was, in that that first Obama Congress, they got it through. Even though this bill had bipartisan support through its history, it was always blocked by influential Democrats or influential Republicans who were getting all kinds of campaign donations from the National Association of Broadcasters.
And National Public Radio didn't play a very
They were against. National Public Radio has tried to keep low power FM, the thought being that these were going to compete with stations. And I think there's actually been studies that prove that it actually boosts listenership because people become more engaged in their radio. That you're probably going to have listeners in Troy that listen to both WOOC and WAMC.
I would imagine that would be the case, and I think you're right. I think once people are inspired to dig out their radios or find an antenna for the one they have, once they've done that, they're going to use the radios more and they're going to listen to other stations. Your history lesson there is really great because it reminds me of just what a heady time it was in the 90s. You mentioned this massive civil disobedience. Basically, one guy or one group in San Francisco challenged the FCC and said, this is unconstitutional. You're telling people that they have to get a license to broadcast, but there are no licenses. And based on that challenge, which inexplicably was took years to adjudicate, the FCC stopped enforcement. And as you say, thousands of stations came on the air all over the country. And it was ranging from probably pretty much unlistenable stations to really fantastic operations, very, very well thought out. So it was in many ways a flowering of the community radio movement. It was just so huge. And out of that came the Prometheus Radio Project and a really well, just fantastically well organized national campaign to bring about a legal low power FM service. Now, the folks at Prometheus cobbled together a coalition that included the usual suspects, the Future of Music Coalition and Free Press and the other organizations working to democratize media in this country, but also the National Rifle Association and some other and church groups, all of whom shared, if not a whole lot of things in common, certainly the desire to be able to communicate with their constituents.
Yeah, Republican John McCain was a longtime supporter of the low-power FM bill and is one of the main reasons that it got through. So this isn't a Democrat-Republican thing. It's basically a campaign donation thing issue.
Yeah, and so one of the fondest memories I have from that period is when Prometheus was trying to develop capacity so these stations could go on the air and also develop a political movement to support their efforts, where they had what they called radio barn raisings. People came from all around the country to help stations go on the air who had gotten construction permits, but for the most part didn't have any local knowledge of how to do a radio station because they hadn't done it before. So you would have these great events, and I think the last one, or one of the last ones, was right here in Hudson for WGXC.
There was one in Northampton 10 years ago, I guess?
Yes, that was earlier than yours. I think was the last one. And as I felt with all of them, I was able to go to one in Opelousas, Louisiana, where an all Zydeco station was put on the air.
Farm workers in Florida. They did one at
Immokalee. Got to go to that one. I mean, just amazing experiences. And I would include Hudson in that too. What an amazing outpouring of community support, not just from the immediate area, but from all around. So this, what you're seeing, is the fruition of essentially a civil rights movement that has lasted for two decades. So the frustration I feel is on one hand there's the victory. You know, we have all these new stations going on the air. And we triumphed over some of the most entrenched special interests that exist, the corporate media that are responsible for the sad state of our electoral system because of the way advertising is handled and the expense of it and so forth. So we triumphed over them, but it took 20 years. And in that intervening 20 years, a lot has changed in the media environment. And now what used to be a sure thing, a radio license, is a little trickier to figure out how to operate because of all the competitive media and also the internet and everything else.
And if you just tuned in, we're talking to Steve Pierce from the Sanctuary for Independent Media in Troy, where WOOCLP is going on the air, or is on the air now and going on the air more fully soon. Anything else you want to tell us about WOOC?
I can tell you a few other things, but I actually have a question about something that you guys are doing. I was listening to WGXC on my radio on the way here. I live in southeastern Rensselaer County, and as I've told you many times before, I'm about 25 feet outside the broadcasting range of WGXC. So in bad weather, I can't go out in the field to listen. It's also a treat to drive south because I get securely in your broadcast range. And I heard you talking about the New Year's Eve celebration, which sounds really fantastic. Now, this is the Half Moon I've had a chance to go to a few times, a really nice, intimate club on the waterfront in Hudson. But what are you guys doing? It's music and food and all that stuff?
All that stuff, yes. Table is providing the food, and Half Moon is providing the drinks. Bobby Previtt is providing some jazz, and DJ Neva is providing some dance tunes, I think.
Wow. That sounds like fun.
Yes, so it will be a good time tomorrow night at the Half Moon in Hudson on Front Street. What's going on in Troy New Year's Eve?
You know, I don't know. I'm sure there's stuff going on.
They have one of those things.
I actually never have been a big New Year's Eve person. I've always tried to make myself less of a danger to others and less of a target to others as well. So I'd stay home. I don't know if they do this anymore, but I also used to listen to National Public Radio on New Year's because they had this great jazz show that celebrated New Year's across the time zone. So you got to have four New Year's with really great music. And as I said, I don't know if they do it anymore, but it was really great to just stay home and listen to that.
Are you going to start any new radio traditions in Troy?
I hope so. It's hard to say. You know, it's a little bit of a mystery wrapped in an enigma. I'm not really sure exactly what it's going to be. I'm not sure what's going to work. It's really an experimental thing. My sense is that we need to be super hyper local. We need to do the things that no one else is doing to get people to listen. We're not going to try to compete against much larger and better financed organizations. The one thing that we have in our advantage, or the biggest thing I think, is the fact that there's 50,000 people who live in a city without access to news and information. The news and information that affects them most directly, the things about the city council, the schools,
the police,
everything, you know. And so I think that there's a need there that we can meet. And we can do it well, and we can do it relatively inexpensively. And there's room around the edges, too. We talk about really presenting an international scope of programming, but with a local focus. And what that's going to be, I don't really know. It's hard to know at this point. I've toyed with different ideas. One thought was to have live broadcasts of Troy City Council meetings. It's the most entertaining thing going on. And Troy asked what's happening on New Year's. If they had a city council meeting on tomorrow night, I'd be there. That would be the most entertaining thing. And so there's the temptation to air that live. But then, will that work? Will people really want to listen to the Troy City Council meetings? You know, and I don't know. There's a lot of experimentation that we're going to have to do. And it's a little bit running blind because we can't afford the audience measurement technology.
You have no idea how if anyone's listening.
You just don't know. You can't afford it, and then the number of listeners is probably smaller than the margin of error on a lot of these services.
Well, when they start to call magically, it's just it's fun when I think 2 or 3 years ago we did some sort of fake. The Center for Disease Control has issued a statement that there's a transmission loose in the community or something, and we actually got a call thinking that it was a real public health issue.
War of the Worlds.
An actual War of the Worlds call. So not only are people listening, but sometimes they actually believe what you're saying. It's just insane.
Well, you guys are doing such a great thing here. It's a real inspiration. We don't... we're kind of doing the inverse thing where you have one radio station with studios in multiple locations, and we're trying to work with other groups so that we have multiple radio stations and covering those locations. And the problem with that is that you don't have the economies of scale of having one broadcast operation serving multiple cities. You have multiple broadcast operations, and even though LPFM is not very expensive relative to full power broadcasting, it's still not nothing. And so whether we can sustain... you know, 3 or 4 transmitters and towers and all that in order to share programming, I'm not sure. So that's why I'm a little, it's a little hazy what we're going to do, because a lot of it depends who we have to work with and what the listener response is.
All right. We've been talking to Steve Pierce this hour, who is the driving force behind WOOCLP, coming from the Sanctuary for Independent Media soon. The web stream will be up soon? Or
yeah, we're working on all that stuff, I think, within the next few weeks. We have a volunteer who's working on the web stream now.
And then live events coming up?
We have a couple of great things going on for folks in the listening area who want to make the trek up the Hudson River on... Saturday and Sunday, I think it's January 9th and 10th, or 10th and 11th, we have a great show. It's a live recording of an album. It's a tribute album to Lee Shaw, who was a fixture in the Capital Region and further beyond. Very accomplished jazz pianist who passed away just a few months ago. And Joe Barna has put together a tribute group that includes some longtime members of Lee Shaw's band. And we're going to be recording the album there with a live studio audience. So the weekend of the weekend of the 10th. And then the following week, following weekend, we're having our first ever Martin Luther King's birthday celebration featuring Taina Asili y La Banda Rebelde, Taina Asili and the Rebel Band. And she's got a bunch of guests, and that should be really great. We've also wanted to do a Martin Luther King special. I feel like all of these tributes that happen around us miss a lot of the essence of what Martin Luther King meant to folks who were in this media democracy movement, certainly, and just in the outside world. The focus on militarism and materialism and racism, which he really articulated most fully in his speech about Vietnam a year before he died. So we're hoping to pull that out, and not just the I Have a Dream speech and the things that people know so much about.
And the website, again, if they want more information about those events?
It's mediasanctuary.org, and you can also email info@mediasanctuary.org if you have any questions. If you go to our website, you can sign up for our email list and keep in touch that way. There'll be more information about WOOC coming out over the next few weeks. Or feel free to call us, 518-272-2390.
All right, thanks for stopping by today.